You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Just go to Indeed.com/PODKATZ13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need. You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Just go to Indeed.com/PODKATZ13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
After spending almost 5 years in the banking and finance sector and qualifying as a chartered accountant at a Big Four firm, Tanvi has now transitioned into being a full-time content creator, presenter, and a social media consultant. Tanvi has positioned herself as one of the most recognizable South Asian faces in the UK and at present has built a following of over 120,000 followers across all social media platforms, as well as hosting a radio show for the BBC in the UK and in Canada. So welcome to the studio, Tanvi. I have so many friends in like the financial sector, but they're all men. And I never get like a real indication of what it's actually like to be a woman, especially an Asian woman in that kind of industry. But how did you get into finance in the first place?
I think it probably started with the fact that both my parents are in finance.
Okay.
So my mum is from Kenya and my dad is from Tanzania. And because of the British Empire, you know, my ethnicity is Indian. They moved to East Africa and then they both immigrated to the UK to study.
Oh, wow.
So like three continents, three generations, which is quite common for a lot of people because of that kind of British Empire. And they both were good at maths. So I suppose they got into finance. And then because I'm Indian, I'm South Asian, finance is like one of those careers that is seen as traditionally high paid, financially stable. So I always thought I would end up in something financy or law, but I did a work experience in law and hated it. So finance quickly became like the thing that I was aiming towards. And then I just really loved economics at A-levels. So I did it as a degree. And when you do economics at uni, everyone around you is like spring weeks, internships, graduate schemes. Like
it's really intense.
Everyone's very on it to secure a really good grad scheme. So by second year of my university, so it was a penultimate year, I did two internships in my summer. One was at a bank and one was at a Big Four. And so going into third year, I already converted both those internships to grad schemes.
Oh,
so
wow.
I already had two grad jobs before even starting third year of uni. So I kind of fell into it in that sense because I had no idea what I actually wanted to do. I just knew it was finance, but that's so broad. Like what even is finance?
Yeah.
So I just thought like it would be a good place to start. And then I ended up taking the graduate scheme at the Big Four firm. And it's like a 3-year grad scheme. And you also do the professional qualification in accountancy, which is 15 exams. And I just thought like, if I have no idea what I want to do,
yeah,
3 years at a good firm, gain the experience, get a qualification. And
I can, most doors,
yeah,
it, really?
Like I can figure the rest out after. So that is kind of how I started my career in finance.
Do you think that the pressure, well, do you feel like there was pressure from other people because everyone was so on it to just pick something as opposed to like taking your time and deciding what you want to do?
Yeah, like, I didn't take a step back to think, what do I actually want to do? What would I enjoy? And when you're in that bubble, I suppose, when everyone around you is like doing applications, applying for jobs, doing those tests, you just do it as well because it's all you know. So it was the pressure from that, but also you're all kind of spurring each other on in like a nice way as well. Yeah. Like I remember I lived in a flat with six girls and we would all kind of discuss interview prep and do tests together and all of that. So you're kind of in that environment, you don't really look outside of it.
What was it like actually being in those like lectures and things? Because I mean, I did law, but I didn't feel like it was always the same types of people that were in those lectures. Did you feel it was the same for you or not?
I went to the University of Nottingham.
Okay.
So it was academic, but not like an Oxbridge academic level. So I felt like it was quite diverse, which I really enjoyed. I felt like there were people from all sorts of backgrounds in terms of race and ethnicity. But what I would say is that everyone was still quite highly educated. Okay. So even if there were Indians, people who were black, people who were white, we all still had a very good base level of education. So in that sense, I feel like we had all come from, you know, people that like work ethic, are driven, ambitious, looking to make a name for themselves in their career. So I feel like that does make a difference with who you surround yourself with in terms of like picking a career, because you all have a life that you want to attain.
Do you think there was, I always found that there was pressure, like, so my mum's Southeast Asian. So I always felt like there was pressure to have a job that your parents are proud to brag about, right?
Yeah, do you know what? My brother's a dentist. So I almost thought, you know what? He's a dentist. He's ticked that box. I can do what I want. But no, I think subconsciously that 100% happened. I just wasn't conscious of it.
Okay.
Because they're both in finance, you know, I see their jobs. I understand what they do. I thought they were quite interesting. So I naturally fell into thinking, okay, finance is a good job. And because they were able to give us a life that allowed us to be comfortable and we had some privileges like being able to go on holiday or having nicer cars, you just look at that and you think, okay, like that's a good option. I never thought it was a be all and end all, but definitely like subconsciously your external environment, your culture, your family all feeds into the decisions you make surrounding your career.
So when you went into these big four firms, that I guess like when university, when you look at it, it's really diverse. I don't think that a big four is as diverse. That must have been a bit of a culture shock to go from Nottingham to that.
Yeah, I think it was more diverse than I thought, to be fair.
Okay.
So I think when it comes to graduate schemes, they are placing so much more of an emphasis on it being diverse, or at least on the surface in terms of quotas, it looks really diverse. So yeah. I was one of eight in my specific business unit and I was the only person of colour, but I wasn't the only girl. And there was someone from Bulgaria, there was someone from Italy. So I felt like it was diverse. But then when you put that into practice, I suppose, and you look at kind of the socioeconomic backgrounds to all of us, that wasn't diverse. So I think, again, like the levels to entry are quite high still.
Yeah.
And I know it's changing because some of them have taken away the degree requirements and the 2-1 requirements and things that not everyone from every single background would have access to. But it was more diverse in terms of culture and ethnicity. Definitely, it's still like 60-40 towards men versus women. But I didn't notice it like I'm the only woman on the floor or I'm the only woman in my team, which is important.
Yeah. I mean, what were some of the unique challenges you felt like you faced when you were working in that firm?
Oh, there was so much. I think from a diversity perspective, obviously being a woman of colour, I think comes with so many nuances and challenges that maybe not everyone would understand. But, you know, the way you work, your culture, the language you speak at home, the festivals you celebrate, just like little things like that, not always feeling like you can bring your 100% authentic self to work. I always felt like I had to fit in with kind of like the lad culture at work, and especially socials, like revolving around pubs and drinking.
Alcohol.
And exactly. And I do drink alcohol, but it's not something that's really a big part of my culture. So things like that, I probably assimilated towards like the white man of corporate without realizing. And then beyond diversity, I think the things I personally struggled with was just work-life balance. Sometimes having a really toxic work culture where the expectations of you as a grad are so intense to basically be free all hours of the day, work throughout the night, basically not have a life outside of work. And there were periods where, you know, I'd work in the office till 3, 4am, get an Uber home, go to sleep for a few hours, get back to work at 7, 8. And like, that is just not sustainable. But when you're doing it and all your grads, your friends are doing it, you think it's normal. And it wasn't until I removed myself from that situation where I was like, hey, that is not healthy or normal in any way.
Yeah, I mean, I see so many TikToks at the moment about people talking about the differences between millennials and Gen Zs in the workplace and how Gen Zs are much better at putting in boundaries. But I don't feel like in some industries you can do that.
No, if I turned around and said, I'm logging off at 6 today because I value my mental health, that's just like a conversation that's unheard of.
Yeah.
I really struggled to say anything for so long because no one else around me was saying anything. And everyone else, whilst they were probably struggling behind closed doors, made it look easy on the outside. And because I didn't want to feel like I was inadequate to do my job, or I didn't deserve a promotion, or, you know, I wanted to also show that I deserved to be there. It's really scary to, you know, stick up for yourself and say, actually, this is too much and this isn't right. And I kind of left it too late, to the point where I was so burnt out. I was having like mental breakdowns every day. And then you're beyond like repair at that point. So I wish I did say something sooner, but at the same time, I know in that situation, like I actually couldn't say that much.
I think it's one of those things as well, when you take in other factors such as race and gender, you feel like people are already assuming you're going to be whiny, or like, you know, have more to say, or just not be as good at your job as some of your other counterparts, and then that's always going to play a part in
you're
your
already
mind.
Like proving yourself as a woman, as a woman of color, that you deserve to be there. So whilst everyone's in the same boat in that sense, you don't want to be the one that is calling something out, because that's just another excuse for them to say, actually, it's because of this. So you kind of want to constantly be working twice as hard as everyone else just to stay afloat. And so I really struggled to say anything.
Do you think it would have been different, like conversations would have been different, if you saw somebody similar to you in more leadership positions?
Absolutely. I mean, whilst there were women, and there was one partner in particular who was amazing, and you can have that conversation with her, there's only so much she can do, one person can do in a firm that size. So she was really close with a lot of the grads. She was a senior partner, and she would constantly, you know, have conversations with us, like, why are people leaving? You know, what are you guys feeling? How are you mentally? And she knew the reality of the situation, but there's only so much one woman's voice can do.
Yeah.
And then in conjunction with that, I had a couple of experiences with Indian women, who one was more of a mentor and one was just like a manager of mine when I was at the bank. And whilst you expect them to kind of open the doors and be there to support you because they understand your struggle, I had the complete opposite experience where I felt like, because they had gone through the struggle, they almost projected that onto the grads, especially me, because I looked like them and they wanted me to go through that same struggle. So there's that kind of element to it as well, where sometimes people that look like us don't want to help us. And in fact, like, they're making you go through the same stuff they did. So
it's kind of a case of, I've had conversations with older people before where they're like, why should I run so someone could walk?
Exactly.
And I think it's really negative to see it like that, because you did the running so somebody could walk.
Exactly. You're opening that door so that, like, you know, hundreds of others can go through that door much more easily than you did. I do think we need more women in leadership positions, and I think we need more women of color in leadership positions, but they also need to be using their position in a positive way and actually having an impact. So again, like, that's another layer that they have to think about.
If you were talking to somebody like a graduate that wanted to go down a similar route, like, what would be the piece of advice that you would give them?
There's so much, but I think the main thing is just to be yourself and not be afraid to use your voice. Like, I wish I had been more vocal with how I was feeling, or even just showing off about the work I did, or in terms of networking, because I think women like shy away in the corner whilst men are so good at boasting about what they've done so that everyone in the room knows. So yeah, just like, be yourself and your authentic self, no matter where you come from, and use your voice to kind of vocalize who you are and build those relationships based on that. Because I think as women, we always maybe get stuck in a box of how we should act and behave and what we should wear. And then there's only so long you can keep that up for. So I feel like if you are bringing your best and most authentic self to work, then you can achieve like the best in your career as well.
Yeah, I think that. So recently I put on LinkedIn a thing that I call the likability trap, and how we judge women based on how likable they are as opposed to any of their other qualities. And I feel like in lots of corporate worlds, it's a little bit like that, where a lot of the time men are praised for being leaders, women are put down for being bossy or bitchy.
Exactly.
just for having the same qualities. And I think that that's why I want to hear from other people about what it would be like for them had the likability trap not existed.
Yeah, I think I would have been so much more assertive and so much more vocal and not worrying about, oh, how is this going to come across? Because those traits are much more important when it comes to being a leader than being popular or likable. So I completely agree. And I think I used to look at the men at work and be like, they're so good at this. Not necessarily better at the job, not necessarily producing a high quality of work, but they're so much better at making sure it's known what they've done and how they've done it. And that's how you get promoted. Like, you can be amazing at your job, but if you don't scream and shout about it and no one knows what you've done, you're never gonna get promoted or progress to the next point. I just think men are so good at it.
What do you think women could do to make themselves have less of an imposter syndrome?
I used to do this thing where I used to just write down every single little thing that I did at work in terms of tasks I performed, who I networked with. And I almost had to kind of re-look over it regularly to remind myself of how much I've achieved. And then I constantly had it fresh in my mind that when it came to a situation where I was with someone senior or I was in a room where I was networking, I had at the forefront everything I've achieved. So it's kind of like practicing and reminding yourself what you've done and how to vocalize that. Even if you do it to yourself in the mirror, I just think we need to build the confidence to do it. And you're not boasting. You can do it in a humble way, but you've got to make it known. And without starting and practicing and doing it maybe with other women first, like, you're not going to be able to do it successfully in a room full of 100 men, say.
Yeah, I think that's why I love journaling so much. When you write like one little thing down and you put your brain in that positive space.
Yeah, and you don't probably realize how much you achieve until you put it to paper and then you have a visual representation of everything you've done. And if you were reading it as if maybe a man had done it or someone else has done that, you'd be so impressed. Yeah. It's almost like rewiring your brain to be proud of what you've done and like acknowledge your own achievements.
I think there's also an element of like a cultural element to that, isn't there?
Yeah.
I think in Asian community, you always feel pressure to do more. Like, what's the next thing that I can do? And I mean, I personally felt it. Like, what can my mum brag about next?
Yeah.
Amongst friends and things. It's so competitive.
Yeah. And I almost feel like there's an element of one, as you're never quite good enough. So if you get an A in an exam, it's like, why didn't you get an A star? Or if you get 90%, it's why didn't you get 100%? And I think that's ingrained in Asian culture from a really young age. But then also as women, I feel like our role in Asian culture traditionally is to just like be quiet, not make too much noise, be the wife, be the daughter, but you're not that one that's kind of paving your own path for yourself. So again, like, we're not taught to be vocal and outspoken and all of these things that naturally leaders would be.
Yeah, I think it's also really confusing when you are being pushed academically, but then you know traditionally. Like, I remember being told, oh, well, you'll never get married if you can't cook.
Oh, my dad used to tell that to me all the time. And I was like, well, then I'll never get married.
I was like, well, I'm still unmarried and I'm a great cook. So it didn't work out for me. But obviously, you're now a full-time content creator.
Yes.
And you host shows on the radio, which I think it's back to a cultural thing. They don't really get it. So how did you approach that conversation with your parents? And you're like, I'm leaving finance and banking to do this.
Yeah, it was definitely scary. I think where I was more fortunate is because I was doing both alongside one another for about 2 years. So my finance job was like my stable income, my high flying side of me that my parents could go and talk about at family functions. Yeah, like, my daughter's an accountant, she works in finance. And then my social media was just the side hustle. Well, actually, it was just a hobby that then turned into a side hustle that then only later 2 years down the line turned into a full-time job. So at that point, when I quit my corporate job, I'd already achieved so much. I'd already maintained a somewhat financially stable income from it, that a lot of the fears they had from me moving into that space didn't exist. Like having, you know, stability, certainty.
Pensions.
I mean, they still exist, some of those worries, but I think I'd taken a lot of that away because I'd already proven myself so much. And again, when you do non-traditional careers, when you're Asian, I feel like you have to do so much groundwork at the beginning to achieve a certain level, and only then is it acceptable. Like, it's not okay to just completely quit and just blindsidedly start a new career elsewhere when it should be. I felt like I had to prove myself a lot so that when I did have that conversation, it maybe wasn't so difficult.
Yeah, I was like, I mean, what was the initial reaction like?
Well, I left my first big four firm to move into another. Okay. So already at that point, they knew I was kind of questioning what I wanted to do and if it was if I was really enjoying it. So I moved from audit into consulting just because consulting is more of like you're speaking to clients more. It's more of a relationship-based role. You're around people. So I thought that might suit me better.
Yeah.
So already they knew that I was taking a little bit of a step back from the technical finance role. But then a year into consulting, they could see that I still wasn't that happy and I was still questioning what more I could be doing. And then, at the same time, my social media was growing rapidly and I'd just been offered my own radio show on the BBC and things like that. So when that conversation did come, I think my dad just said, you know what, if you're going to do it, now's the time to do it.
Yeah.
You're young. You're allowed. Exactly. You should be able to take a risk. And they were fully supportive and they always have been supportive of social media. It's not like they've ever been like, why are you taking pictures? What are you doing? They just never thought it would be a full-time job. So their support almost just grew overnight, knowing that that is my kind of sole form of income now.
I think it's one of those things as well. It's a generational thing, isn't it? They don't really get that social media can generate income.
Well, it just wasn't a job for them when they were growing up. Like social media didn't even exist when I was a kid. So let alone when they were growing up, did they realize it's a job? And it's only really become, I think, a respectable and a financially stable job in the last maybe 10, 15 years. So yeah, it's an education thing, which is why I never want to hold it against them if they weren't supportive or they didn't get it, because there's such a lack of understanding and awareness about that space. I mean, I think even people my age don't understand, you know, the power of social media and what you can do with it if they're not in that space. So no, I'm completely empathetic that my parents wouldn't understand that.
I think from the outside looking in, everyone thinks it's easy. Mm. You wake up, you take a couple of pretty pictures, you kind of post them, you go back to sleep. And it's not like that at all, especially when you do content like you do, when you talk about, you know, how to get into certain careers and especially in the Asian space, there's not that many Asian content creators out there.
Yeah.
So, I mean, what were the challenges you faced when you were trying to break into that industry?
Oh, there's a lot of challenges being a South Asian woman on social media. I think the lack of representation is really hard because it's hard to envision you being successful in something when you don't see that many people that look like you doing it. And I remember growing up, there were a few YouTubers who were Indian and like they're huge, but there was no one else. And I never really thought that could be for me because there was like three or four of them and that was it. So I think being taken seriously in this industry is hard because there's not a lot of people that look like us. I think getting the same opportunities is hard because we're sometimes seen as less marketable because less people look like us who could be our target audience. And I also think getting equal pay is a huge thing. I think I've been on shoots sometimes where my white counterparts are literally getting paid double just because they're white. We're doing the exact same job, the same hours. And I think that's something that we need to talk about because it's similar to the gender pay gap, but it's a racial pay gap on social media. And yeah, essentially people that aren't white getting paid significantly less because they're seen as less marketable.
What do you think that the industry could do to kind of to change that or to make the pay gap smaller or be more open and transparent about pay?
I just think brands need to be better, firstly, at having more representation. So, you know, Muslims don't just exist during a Ramadan campaign. Indians don't just exist during a Diwali campaign. There are creators out there that exist throughout the year, and it's ensuring that they are using diverse range of influencers and creators throughout the year. I think brands also have a responsibility to pay everyone the same amount. And like any industry, I feel like the creator economy should be regulated in a way that any other industry would. It's just because it's so new that there is a lack of regulation and education. But I do think over time it will get better. And then I also think kind of the responsibility of other creators who are kind of white creators to almost call out brands if they aren't being diverse or to support people of color, to kind of lift them up with them. Because I think whilst they may be benefiting from the system as a whole is flawed because not everyone's being treated equally. So yeah, I think there's a lot that can be done.
Yeah, I think as well, it's knowing in this industry when that's happening, it's it's also bad on your mental health because you're asking yourself, oh, am I not worth the same? Am I good enough? And you probably do, I receive a lot of racist messages and comments. You also have to battle with that side of it as well.
Yeah, I think we sometimes get hate from the wider population, which could be due to racist comments, but it also could be to anything else. And then I also feel like I face hate from my own community because I'm doing something that is different, outspoken. I think last week I got a comment from a fake account, obviously, but it was like, oh, the brown community doesn't claim her. She's doing everything we wouldn't want our brown girls to do. And so it's tough because you're fighting the general population and also your own. And I do feel like as a community, we need to do better at supporting each other because we're all we have if we're trying to make real change and a difference in the world.
Do you think it's slightly easier when you're doing radio shows as opposed to just social media?
The thing with radio is you don't see, you know, the content response in that sense. Like you don't have access to comments, or you don't have access to, if something goes viral on TikTok, you don't have to sit through and read those comments, right? So with radio, it's like a show that is prepped, that is planned. I think it's a really fun and nice thing to do, but I find that I personally have way more of an impact and I enjoy content because it's my name, it's my direction, it's the message I want to get across. So I think that equally is important, but yeah, I definitely face way less hate doing radio than content creation.
One thing that is I love and hate about this industry at the same time is that you're surrounded by people all of the time, but you're not. Like, it can be very lonely because you are self-employed, you're a freelancer, but at the same time when there's events and things, there's loads of people around, but it's not the same. And I think that's one of the things I miss about having a 9-to-5, that same team ethos. What do you think as an industry that we could do to kind of close that bridge?
Yeah, being an influencer can be so lonely. Like, there's days where I've just sat by myself at home, filming, editing, replying to emails. And you're right, like in the corporate world, you would never get that. You would always be speaking to your team or you'd be in the office. And I definitely miss that. So I think creators and influencers need to come together more and support one another and build genuine, real friendships and relationships, because I've got lots of friends who are in the industry and some are amazing, but some, you question people's motives sometimes because, you know, are they looking to gain something from you? Do they want to just create content with you for their own clout? Whatever it is, I think it's much harder to make friends with people in the industry because you never know someone's true intentions. But myself and two of my friends who are creators, we've founded something called the Creator Space. So it is essentially a network for creators. A lot of us are ex-corporate and we've quit our jobs, so we really feel the difference between going from employment to self-employment. And it's literally just a community that we can share knowledge about being creators, because there's so much that we don't talk about, like how much do people charge, how to negotiate with brands. So we have like a knowledge sharing aspect to it, but also just we put on fun events and there's no obligation to post or promote a brand or a product or a service. You just come together and have fun with people that get it. So things like that, I think, are so important.
Yeah, I think actually I was having a conversation with somebody, a journalist, about unionizing reality TV. And I think I was in my head, I was trying to figure out how it would work. But at the same time, it's basically like that for influencers, right? Someone you can go to for like impartial advice and like how to know how to navigate certain parts.
Yeah, and also protecting influencers and creators, because it's such a new industry, I feel like we can so easily be taken advantage of.
Yeah.
And because we're on our own, you know, brands not charging us, like not paying us enough, all of these
on time.
Or I was literally chasing an invoice just now. And I think if it was regulated and that, or there was someone that could hold brands accountable, like the FRC, but for influencers, that would be great, because you'd feel like you'd feel so protected, I think.
Yeah, I think there is regulations out there for the industry, but it's regulations against us.
Exactly. It doesn't help us.
For us.
Yeah.
And I think it's that stigma that we live this like lovely, luxurious lifestyle and like life is really easy. I mean, I'm going to say there is harder jobs out there.
Yeah, definitely.
Than what we do. But I think that people don't appreciate how taxing it can be sometimes.
Yeah. And I think the other thing with content creation that I really underestimated myself, like I've gone from one job that's in finance where this is your role and like you have to be this person that looks after this report, that deals with these clients and that's it kind of thing. So outside of that realm, yeah, you've got a support system that can help you. I think with a content creator, you just don't realize how many different skills and job roles and job titles you may need to do. So for example, if I was doing a campaign all by myself, it would be like the strategy, the planning, the scripting, the filming, the hair and makeup, the stylist, and then the editing. So those are so many things I'd never done before. And I was like, how on earth am I gonna edit a video? Or how am I gonna know how to film something? And I guess you can learn, anyone can learn anything. There's so many resources out there, but you just may need to be something completely different one day and learn new skills the other. So that's why I think it's hard, because you're sometimes expected to do so many different things in one task.
And social media is like constantly adapting. Yes. There is always a new app and you're like, do I need to be on this app or is it just another thing to add to my workload?
There's a new app, there's a new algorithm, there's new formats. I think I've got to the point now where I'm just going to pick and choose, and I'd rather not spread myself too thin across like all the apps and all the different content types. And I'd rather just produce good quality content for the things that I know and I love. But it is constantly changing, which is why I always say you can't ever solely rely on just being a content creator, because like I had a TikTok account and last year and it was on nearly 100K and I lost it like that because someone somehow hacked into my account, and I'm still trying to get that back. So it's just crazy how with social media, it's so unpredictable.
Yeah,
you can never rely. Yeah, you can never rely on just one form of income.
Especially if that was like your main, like TikTok was your main thing.
Yeah, that's like your career and your livelihood gone overnight. So it's scary. So I also think it's important to look at social media as a business to kind of diversify the streams that you are in. So that, yeah, if one goes overnight, you've got four or five other things to fall back on.
Long term as a content creator, like what is your big goals, would you say?
I feel like just having a brand that is around everything I want to do, which is, you know, increase representation for South Asian women in mainstream media, in sport, in the corporate world, being an inspiring role model to the next generation. And if I can start a business or have a product and service that encompasses all those things, then I would love that. And I'd love to have a few, and I'd love to make a real impact on the next generation by doing something I love, you know, and something I'm passionate about, whatever that might be.
It's like really shocking to me when you were sat there talking to you, you seemed so confident and like headstrong. And then when you're talking about how in the corporate world you had felt like you had to be like more reserved, I was just like, how can this woman be reserved? Because you're just so...
I think it's because when you're surrounded by so many other people that are seen as like, you know, more successful or more of the stereotype of what you would see at the top of all these companies, you just feel less than.
Yeah.
And you think you're never going to be them. I mean, I'm never going to be a white man. So my potential is always somewhat capped. Or if I want to be the CEO or the CFO, I have to act in a certain way or I have to look a certain way. So I never felt like I could just be myself.
Well, you have to be a CEO of your own thing.
Yeah, pretty much.
And I think that's why loads of young people want to be content creators, because they are the CEO of their own thing.
Yeah, I think you are your own boss. And I think the value in being able to wake up every day and me deciding how I want to spend my day. You know, if I want to go to the gym at 12 o'clock, I want to. I had a hair wash at 1 o'clock yesterday in the afternoon because I could. Like, just having the flexibility of your day and like being able to put your health first, I think is so important, because my mental health got so compromised by the job I was in. And no matter how much I was getting paid or the firm's name that I was working for, it just wasn't worth it.
I think it's going to be a wake-up call to a lot of big firms when, you know, the older generation retire and all the Gen Zs start coming in and they're setting some hard boundaries for what they will and won't accept.
I definitely think that there is a shift towards them caring more about mental health and diversity and things that are really important in like the long-term success of your workforce. But the other thing I think corporate firms should really improve on is moving with the times in terms of social media. Because when I started creating content as like a career creator, there weren't many people that looked like me, and they had a huge issue with it. Obviously, there's things like client confidentiality, professionalism, and all of those things that come with working in the corporate world. But one thing that they need to improve on is knowing that they can't control what people do outside of their job and what they say related to their work. And now there's so many, like, you know, corporate creators online, and they're like literally shedding light on the reality of it, so that I feel like they can't keep control of everyone.
Yeah.
But when I was doing it, I got told all the time, like, the board of directors is watching your TikTok, so be careful, and all these things. And I wasn't saying anything bad. I was just sharing my life. Yeah, literally. So I think, yeah, they probably need to just work with creators rather than against them.
Yeah, I think I've seen so many come spend the day with me in the life of a corporate banker on TikTok. There's so many of them flying around. And you know, it's actually surprisingly a lot of male content creators that do it.
Yeah, and it's interesting because like that's what I would want to see before applying for a job. I'd want to see the reality. I'd want to see what are the hours actually like, or what kind of work are you actually doing? Because through career fairs and websites, like, there's only so much you're going
to
find out.
The free pen isn't going to really sell it
exactly.
to me.
Exactly.
Like.
So I think there needs to be support from firms to allow creators to share the reality of their job. And in turn, that will help them to have more people wanting to be part of that industry.
I mean, they have public affairs teams, right? Like, just it's part of the same package.
Yeah.
But I always ask my guests a similar final question. So what piece of advice would you offer to your younger self based on your career and life journey so far?
I would say to not put too much pressure on yourself to have it all figured out. Because when I was 16, I thought I was going to be, you know, the CFO of a company by the time I was 30, and I was going to be in a corporate world and be a partner with the perfect life and family. And that's all I ever knew for myself. But I've quit the corporate world. I've become a content creator. I'm self-employed. I travel the world. I have a radio show, and I never thought I would ever be able to do anything like that. So don't put so much pressure on yourself to have it all figured out. And who knows, in like 2 years time, I could be working for a different company somewhere else and not be doing social media at all. So I think it's just understanding that life changes and it's a journey, and just to be open-minded about everything.
Oh, that's really amazing. And you know, I definitely share that same sentiment. I thought I'd be married with kids and a dog and a white picket fence life by now, and I couldn't imagine anything
worse
than that. So honestly, thank you for sharing your story, and I've loved hearing about your journey.
Oh, thanks for having me. Been so fun.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Just go to Indeed.com/PODKATZ13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need. You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Just go to Indeed.com/PODKATZ13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
You have 5 new messages.
Hey, Carl, it's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week?
Hey, Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, Finance. Just need those receipts today.
Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week. Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again.